Peter Duggan Capaldi, born in 1958, is the
Yes.
third, but not the last, Scottish actor to play the Doctor. Peter's paternal grandfather was Italian, hence the name Capaldi. But what business did his parents run? It would have been a real twist if I'd done two trick questions.
This podcast
was recorded remotely and contains adult themes and language. Hello and welcome to TVDNA, our Hooniversity Challenge episode on the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi. My name is Adam Henning, and fear makes companions of us all. And my companion, as ever, is Mr. Neil Shepek.
I'm scared to live alone. I ran from Gallifrey because I was scared.
It's all right, Neil. Don't worry. I'm here with you.
Great. I need a companion.
Yeah, so Peter Capaldi. Now, we've watched the episodes Listen, Heaven Sent, World Enough and Time, and The Doctor Falls, or at least I have. Are those the ones you've watched as well, Neil?
Yeah, yeah.
So quite a good selection across the Capaldi era. Should we start with general thoughts on Peter Capaldi?
I guess, due to his age, it's obvious for me to say that it's a slightly more mature Doctor. If we're looking at the Doctor's range as he's grown, we're now entering a kind of university, very philosophical element to the Doctor. I'm not saying that any of the others haven't been philosophical, but particularly with Heaven Sent, I feel that Capaldi's Doctor isn't afraid, or at least the writers aren't afraid of presenting him and him as an actor. Capaldi isn't afraid of presenting the Doctor's fear and his anger and all of those dangerous or wobbly emotions that we've probably seen some of them in previous Doctors, but not as amalgamated as we do with Capaldi's Doctor.
It's interesting that they'd had sort of a series of younger Doctors and then went back to sort of an older man. And I do think, you know, as an actor, he brings intelligence and
yeah.
gravitas to the role. Although he can handle the humour well. We know that he's a brilliant comic actor. Yeah, I think initially in that first episode, I felt like he was just missing a certain something. But he, again, like Matt Smith, he kind of grew on me as I watched more and more of his episodes.
I know that the viewers switched off during Capaldi. I would say for that time period, probably the most famous actor to take on the role rather than a newbie, like Tennant or Matt Smith, both of which have achieved amazing profiles and are amazing actors. But Capaldi was an actor that a lot of people already knew. And we'll get on to Jodie for the next episode, because she was also well known, maybe not as much as Capaldi. But what he definitely offers the Doctor, and having done these university challenges and looking back over the various Doctors, I am more and more seeing the Doctor as a character who develops and grows. And I don't think that Capaldi's Doctor is like an old man who has seen everything, someone who's, let's say, a decade older than you, me, Adam. I actually see him, his Doctor, as that kind of university, very philosophical, very intellectual, a period in his development where he's really exploring all the thoughts and also exploring his own emotions. And that's part of his development. I haven't had time to think about how that relates to Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. And it is said that Nchichi Gatwa's Doctor is like a kind of reboot, in that he's gone through a whole load of stuff and he's starting fresh with a joy of life. But there's also a matureness there which there definitely is in Capaldi's Doctor.
We talked, didn't we, about Matt Smith being in the evolution of the Doctor as a character, having at that point, he needed to have that childlike curiosity about things and was almost in a way of protecting him. Whereas Peter Capaldi's Doctor feels much more capable of confronting his fears or determined to explore his fears and what he's afraid of. So I do think it is fascinating how they have shaped each Doctor to deal with what the experience has been up to that point. Should we talk about Listen then? This is the earliest episode in these four that we've watched. I thought this one was quite fascinating as an episode.
It's a great episode. I mean, Stephen Moffat, who wrote this one, and I think was showrunner at the time, I'm pretty sure of that. The whole idea of attaching the narrative of this episode to the fear of what's under the bed. I mean, that's what Moffat is extremely good at, is looking at childhood fears and connecting it with the Doctor. I absolutely loved Listen. I'm hesitating of revealing any spoilers yet, but obviously we will do in this episode. So if you haven't watched the episode, listeners, please do watch it or be prepared that we will tell you what's under the bed.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's framed kind of through Clara, her date. She's having a date and she gets called. I can't remember exactly what happens, but she goes to the TARDIS. And she ends up putting her fingers in these weird vagina-like controls on the TARDIS because she's thinking about this guy that she's been on a date with. It sends them to, I think first him as a child and sort of exploring his fears of what's under the bed, and then him as the last man left at the end of the universe later on.
Colonel Orson Park.
Yeah. It's kind of unclear as to whether he's... Well, I think he is the sort of ancestor, isn't he, of the guy that she's on a date with. But I think initially when they go and see him as a child, it is he's changed his name. But that is him as a younger...
Yeah.
And then she gives him this soldier to sort of protect him from what might be underneath the bed.
I've written down a quote by the Doctor for this episode where he says, "I have to know." And that is also a big thing about Capaldi's Doctor, in that he absolutely needs to know the answer. And I'm not saying that any other Doctor doesn't feel that, but it seems stronger with Capaldi's Doctor that he absolutely needs to know the answers.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of links into Heaven Sent in a way, which we'll talk about next.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimately, they do end up going back to this young boy, and it turns out this young boy is the Doctor. So we see the Doctor as a child who's having these nightmares, and it ends up being Clara under the bed, right?
And I've also noted, I think it was the Doctor who said it, or maybe it being Clara, but fear is a superpower. Fear can make you kind. And just watching these, well, four episodes, but three themed episodes, fear and being scared seems to be a huge theme, certainly within these episodes. And I don't think that we've seen fear and, to be kind, let's say, wobbly emotions for the Doctor. Fear, being scared, being angry, being frustrated. We've seen elements of that in previous Doctors, but certainly the episodes that I've rewatched for this, it seems that Capaldi has been the incarnation that can absolutely address those emotions.
Very much so. And I think Jenna Coleman is, again, brilliant in these episodes. I think she's really good as Clara. There's a scene where we get a scene of John Hurt going back to this barn towards the end of this episode. I was a little bit confused about what the barn was meant to represent and what happened in the barn, but I'm not sure it matters that much in the great scheme of things.
Well, in the great scheme of things, it's very much related, in that the War Doctor, played by John Hurt, is in a barn, and he is visited by different incarnations of the Doctor as well as Rose. And that's a huge part of that Doctor's, the War Doctor's reincarnation. So, yeah, it does mean a lot.
Cool. No, all good. I'm sure when I go back and rewatch the whole of the new Who, it will become much clearer for me. But yeah, any other thoughts on Listen as an episode?
I thought it was a great episode. I think if you've not watched any Peter Capaldi Doctor, I think it's a very good start. It's very much a Stephen Moffat, not as good as some of his better episodes, and we'll get to that because I think Heaven Sent is one of his amazing episodes. But yeah, I would hugely recommend watching it if you want to have a jump through the various Doctors and not just watch them from the start and all of their episodes.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I think if I'd gone straight into Heaven Sent before having watched Listen, I might have been a little bit bemused. But I think this was definitely a good introduction to Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, a good place to start. I wish I'd had time to watch Robot of Sherwood, which was the episode before Listen, but I ran out of time, unfortunately.
That's a lot of fun, but also Listen has got so much depth and so much good writing and performances. Robert of Sherwood, yeah, it's a huge amount of fun. So if you have the time, and let's face it, both me and Adam are trying to watch all the Oscar films and catch up on all the various Doctor Who's, and we actually have to live life and we have jobs. But yeah, I would hugely recommend, well, watching all the Doctor Who's, but if you can't, like us recapping, then definitely watch Listen. To watch Capaldi.
So Heaven Sent, then, the second one that we watched, sees the Doctor trapped in a castle. He's being chased by a hooded figure, having just seen his best friend die. And that's the kind of setup of this. And it's pretty much a puzzle box episode, right? It's like, how does he, what does it mean? Why is he there? And how does he escape this castle? Yeah. What were your thoughts on Heaven Sent, Bill?
Well, having watched a lot of Capaldi with Clara Osborne, it all made a whole load of sense to me. Before I go into more detail, I really want to know what you got from it.
Well, overall, I'm not sure I got the episode as a whole. It's a weird thing. There's sort of clues along the way, but it's very much you feel like a prison designed for him. Whether it's a prison of his own making or not. I think he's suggesting that somebody else has created the prison. But he works out through the course of this that he can stop this creature by making a true confession. I think initially he thinks it's sort of saying something that's true because he says he's suddenly afraid to die. And that's sort of initially what stops the creature. And then we sort of later on he's telling all of these different stories and these different things that are going along. He works out he's got 82 minutes. If he runs from one end of the castle to the other, he's got 82 minutes before this creature catches up with him for him to work out things and to unlock the different pieces of the puzzle. I did think it would be quite fun if the creature did finally catch up to him, just tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You're it."
He is working against the clock, but the episode has him enter into his head, into his mind space, and at times that's the TARDIS, and he works out what he needs to do with putting in calculations into the TARDIS. I thought that episode of all of the ones that we've watched specifically for this podcast showed how much his Doctor, Capaldi's Doctor, can show and experience fear and anger and frustration. I mean, he talks a lot in this episode about how much he's scared to die. And I'm really certain that hasn't been seen in any other Doctor. This is also around the period where, as fans, as viewers, we are pretty certain he's only got 13 lives and now he has he been given more? And what happens when he dies? You know, it's kind of a question mark in our minds. And it's also a huge amount, another kind of wobbly negative emotion. It's usually about grief. He's dealing with Clara's grief, or his grief, Clara. And it feels like that is the main driving emotion for this episode, is that he's trying to work out how to grieve, almost as if he hasn't grieved for any of the other companions, but he is grieving with Clara, and it's fresh and it's new and he doesn't know how to deal with it. I thought Heaven Sent was a stunning episode on a dramatic and literacy basis.
It's incredibly impressive as an episode, I think. I mean, he talks about this story about breaking down this mountain, I think, a bird sort of pecking on this thing, and he finally escapes by breaking down this crystal block over billions and billions of years. He creates this sort of time loop where he's able to transfer himself back into his body the moment that he arrives. There's kind of all of these skulls underneath the ocean floor, which are all of his skulls, I believe. And, you know, this is it's very cleverly crafted in that way. But the other story he tells is about this hybrid of a Time Lord and a Dalek, and this kind of apocryphal story about this hybrid that was created that I think was meant to bring peace to the Time War between the Daleks and the Time Lords. And I did kind of see this coming, but his final reveal at the end of the episode is that he is the hybrid, although he's not genetically part Dalek. That bit was the myth, but he is essentially this dangerous hybrid that has been, that they're trying to keep hidden or unknown?
Yes, he is the hybrid, but as you say, not half Dalek. He's the half-hybrid because the way I took it is that he was half human and half Gallifreyan, and that's why he's the hybrid, and that's why he survives. And at the end of the episode, he, via the TARDIS, ends up in a desert, and this young kid from Gallifrey just runs to him, and he says, "I'm back. I came the long way round." And then we see that he's very close to Gallifrey, and he wants the kid to say that he's back. You know, this is a long narrative, certainly throughout the Rossetti Davis era, but also picking up on a lot of the earlier Doctor Who episodes about his relationship with the Gallifreyans and his history and his development as a Time Lord and who he is as a Time Lord. Yeah, it really set up a large part of his story.
And there's I got the sense there's this prophecy in the background of all of this as well, which I don't sort of fully grasp. And I think perhaps, obviously, if I'd watched more of this era, I would have got a bit more of that. But ultimately, it didn't really matter for me. I think it was quite an exciting end to that episode. And it sort of, you could tell it was part of a larger story, which again was kind of enough for me in that moment.
Yeah, definitely. As a huge fan who has watched loads of Doctor Who, it was a really exciting part. And knowing that Jodie Whittaker was coming up, at that point, I didn't know that Chuti was going to take the helm. It was a very exciting time, knowing that we'd find out more about this mysterious character who we always want to stay mysterious because he's Doctor Who. That's part of the whole enjoyment of watching the show. But as soon as you get teased with more details,
Well, let's move on to the final two episodes we watched. So this is a two-parter, World Enough in Time and The Doctor Falls. And there's one more episode of Peter Capaldi after this. I think it's a special. But this is a whole new set of companions for me. I had not come across these companions before. So as well as Doctor Who, you've got Pearl Mackie playing Bill Potts. and you've got Matt Lucas playing Nardole, and Missy, again, another character, my first introduction to Missy, played by the brilliant Michelle Gomez. So this kind of starts with the three of them, the three companions, if you like, on a trial quest set by the Doctor, with Missy sort of taking the role of Doctor Who on this quest. And they discover this large spaceship that's trying to escape from a black hole. That's the kind of setup for what's going on initially in this episode. But interestingly, I have performed on stage with Matt Lucas back in my National Youth Theatre days. He won't remember me at all, but it was a very long, long time ago. But then the character that is they meet on the ship is played by Ollie Lansley, who's an actor, been involved with Les Enfants Terribles for a long, long time. And the first time I came to the Space Theatre, which is where I've worked now for quite a while, was to see a play that he was in. So I had connections to two of the cast in this episode, which was brilliant. And I thought that both Matt and Ollie were superb in this.
Absolutely. Yeah, a very fun episode, but also kind of introducing the Cybermen.
Yeah, so the Mondasian Cybermen, right? It's quite a while. I think the last time we watched a Cybermen episode was the Patrick Troughton episode, which is our second one of these. Yeah, I thought it was really clever the way... So Bill ultimately gets shot through the chest and then is taken by these creatures and taken to a hospital where she meets a character called Razor, and there's a sort of nurse character there as well, and there's all of these sort of people in hospital beds with these sort of white socks over their heads, essentially. But it's quite clever that piece by piece, they change her into a Cyberman. And I think these are meant to be early Cybermen, like this is the origin of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
Because towards the end of this episode, the first episode, John Sim as the Master shows up and he explains that this is where the Cybermen all started, from this planet that they are on. Yeah, so I thought all of that was really, really clever. I just didn't love the design of the early Cybermen.
Well, okay, but, you know, first attempt, let's say.
Yeah, no, I think it fit. I think it, yeah, I just think they looked a bit like almost sort of bananas in pyjamas, kind of. I got what they were going for. They weren't quite as scary for me as the original Cybermen.
No, but I think as far as putting together a narrative and seeing the genesis of one of the Doctor's main, I guess, villains, I enjoyed it. I thought it was very nicely done and very fun.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, the comedy in those first scenes of that first episode of these two. So Michelle Gomez is kind of pretending to be the Doctor and talking about her companions, and she calls them something like comedy effect and exposition. Matt Lucas as Nardole is there for comic relief, and then the companion is generally there for exposition. I thought that was really meta and clever. And then they also talk about the fact that his real name, the Doctor's real name, is Doctor Who.
Which we find out isn't actually the case. But I thought the actress who played Bill Potts did amazingly. And the fact that she ended up as a Dalek as a Cyberman, in the same way that Clara ends up as a Dalek. I just thought it was very clever writing.
Again, can't fault the craft that goes behind all of this. It is really, really clever. And I think it just blends that science fiction and the comedy and the drama all together really nicely. I quite liked the idea of Venusian Aikido. Normally you need to have four arms for that. Yeah, some lovely, really lovely comedic stuff in there.
And I also loved having two masters with John Sims and Missy. Michelle Gomez, we've had that with the Doctors previously, and to have it with the Master, who's also a Time Lord and almost like, well, basically a peer Doctor, I really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, I again, as I said, this is my first sort of introduction to Missy as a character, but it felt like we got quite a lot of dialogue about this, about the Doctor and his relationship with Missy slash the Master, and how they were, you know, they grew up together, and it felt like the Doctor was really trying to connect with Missy and work with her, rather than always being, you know, an opponent to the Master. And that plays out a little bit towards the end, doesn't it, with how the Master and Missy take each other out effectively.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of that is used to set up Jodie Whittaker, right? There are a lot of mentions, a lot of references to the Master being a woman. And then, you know, it felt like it was just sort of teasing us and priming us for the fact that the next incarnation of the Doctor was going to be a woman.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's a shame Jodie Whittaker wasn't as popular as I would have liked her to be. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And the relationship between the two Masters, between Sim and Missy, like, Sim walks away from his other self and Missy does the same. And that represents the difference between the Master and the Doctor.
Yeah, definitely. I thought all of that stuff was really clever. And the confrontation, you know, they have a conversation on a rooftop, don't they? And the Master and Missy are trying to leave the Doctor behind. And this is after Bill's been transformed into a Cyberman. And it's all really clever stuff. Tell me a bit more about Nardole, because I think he's fascinating as a character, but I know very little about him.
It's a great cameo by Matt Lucas. And he really supports the vulnerable children, and which makes him a very likeable character. I mean, he's obviously very funny, as Matt Lucas is, with his... I wouldn't say that he was the most memorable companion, but he showed an empathy, certainly towards vulnerable young people. I'm very fond of him as a companion, but he's not a companion like Clara or Donna or Rose, who has really made an impact on the Doctor.
Yeah, he's an alien, right? He's not.
Yeah.
I got that he was an alien, and that he was he'd set up a black market previously. That was sort of the background information that I got from him, and the sense that he is generally useful. Like, there's a couple of times where the Doctor says, "Nardole, go and do something useful, or have you been useful?"
Yeah, I'd be happy to have him as a PA.
Great. So the second episode of this is kind of set up as a bit of an Alamo sort of situation, where they've kind of retreated back to this farm, and there's a load of children that have been protected from the Cybermen, and they're sort of setting up the defenses and modifying these weapons, and ultimately someone has to stay behind so that they can escape. They're all still on this ship, aren't they? That the fact that the time is different at the top of the ship to the bottom of the ship. The bottom of the ship is closer to the black hole. So it takes the Cybermen time to get to the level that they're at. But the idea is that the Doctor is going to, they're all being drawn, draw the Cybermen there. He's going to explode everyone whilst they escape to a different level. Meanwhile, Bill is a Cyberman, but has retained some of Bill's personality and can still cry, which is crucial. Later on, the Cyberman tears have an impact. And yeah, it ends kind of with a lot of explosions and the Doctor being rescued, or the Doctor's body effectively being rescued by Bill. And then someone returns and saves Bill at the end. Again, a character that I didn't really know, but obviously had a history and a background from previous episodes. So kind of Bill goes off on this adventure with her, and then the Doctor is kind of left, but this Cyberman tier wakes him up, and he's on the verge of regenerating, but doesn't want to. He's kind of resisting it and refusing to regenerate. And then we get the big...
Regeneration plays a big part in this, second episode of this two-parter. He is so close, but he doesn't need to. And a combination of Bill and Nardole and Missy, I've got written down, "Where have you taken me? I don't want to change again. I don't want to keep being someone else." And again, with Capaldi, I feel like his interpretation of the Doctor really focuses on genuine issues. Like, I don't want to keep being someone else. I don't want to die. I don't want to change. And again, looking over the Doctor as a development, for me, it feels comfortable looking at him as a, not a teenager, but as a student, like a kind of A-level student. And certainly when I was that age, I didn't want to die, and I was trying to find myself, and I didn't want to be defined by what I was forced to be defined as. So that all kind of makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we get to the end of the episode. He leaves the TARDIS and walks out to find the first Doctor, played by David Bradley, which sets up the special, which I haven't watched, which will be sort of Peter Capaldi's final episode and Jodie Whittaker's first, I assume.
Yeah, Peter Bradley, who's an amazing actor, and unfortunately William Hartnell is no longer with us, so David Bradley played the first Doctor, and it was extremely touching and just kind of shows how they're all connected, they're all the same person. And that's one of the amazing things about the show, is that even though they're reincarnations, they are all still the same person.
Well, I think overall, I did enjoy the Peter Capaldi episodes. I think, as I said earlier, I think he's got that intelligence and the gravitas and all of the stuff that we've discussed about the sort of emotional arc of the Doctor. So I would go back and watch more of these, but probably not before I've watched the David Tennant and Matt Smith stuff.
Yeah, definitely watch those first, because I think one of the great things that Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat have done is create a, I know I use the word a lot, but create a narrative that really makes sense of the Doctor's development. So yeah, I think it would be great if you start off with, and also, one of the greatest things during Russell T. Davies' tenure is the River Song storyline. I really want you to watch that, because I think that is done amazingly. And it starts with David Tennant. Most of it is with Matt Smith. Watch it. Honestly, it is so good. It's so clever. It's so emotional. It's amazing. It really is.
You know, the legacy that's passed on to each Doctor, I think, is really interesting. And let's get into our Hooniversity challenge then, Neil. So I've got five questions for you, as ever, on Peter Capaldi. Yeah. So Peter Duggan Capaldi, born in 1958, is the third, but not the last, Scottish actor to play the Doctor. He was an Oscar-winning short filmmaker. Franz Kafka's It's a Wonderful Life was the film that he made and won the Oscar for. So he's a director as well as an actor. Peter's paternal grandfather was Italian, hence the name Capaldi. But what business did his parents run? Was it A, pizza business, B, a pasta business, or C, an ice cream business?
I'm really tempted to say all of the above, because I know that'll be the answer at some point, but I don't think it's this. I'm going to say a pasta business.
It was an ice cream business, I'm afraid. So, yeah, close but no cigar that time. Peter studied as an art student. What did he do during his time as an art student? Was he A, the lead singer and guitarist in a punk rock band? Was he in a cabaret act called Bing and Dean Hitler?
Yep.
And did he write an alternative pantomime of Sleeping Beauty?
Yep, all of the above.
Yeah, correct. That was this week's trick question. And the answer is all of the above. The punk rock band was called the Dream Boys, which I thought was lovely. He appeared in more than 40 film and TV shows. I remember watching him in The Crow Road and as a parent in Skins. But which character did he voice in the Disney film Christopher Robin? Was he A, Piglet, B, Rabbit, or C, Owl?
I really want to say Owl, but I think he'd be an awesome Piglet. I'm going to say Owl.
Well, the answer is actually Rabbit.
Oh.
And I think he does, yeah, one of the things I noticed watching these Doctor Who episodes is that he talks at a rapid, rapid pace. Sometimes I struggle to keep up with that. But yeah, obviously he was best known for playing Malcolm Tucker in The Thick of It.
Yeah.
An incredibly successful show and a performance. But in which year did he win the BAFTA, the male performance in a comedy role? Was it 2006, 2008, or 2010?
I'm really tempted to go for all of those because he was absolutely amazing in that role. Sorry, what years again?
2006, 2008, or 2010.
Well, I'm obviously guessing here. I think he deserved it every single one of those years. I'm going to go 2010.
That is the correct answer. He was nominated. It would have been a real twist if I'd done two trick questions. But yeah, he was nominated in both 2006 and 2008, and he won it eventually in 2010. He appeared in a 2008 episode with the 10th Doctor and as a different character in Torchwood Children of Earth, Doctor Who spin-off. But which Doctor was he invited to audition for initially? So before he became the 12th Doctor, which Doctor was he invited to audition for? Was it the 8th Doctor, the 9th Doctor, or the 10th Doctor?
Well, firstly, I want to say that he was in the Something of Pompeii. He played a character in an episode where Pompeii was part of the title. And I think that was with David Tennant's Doctor. I am going to ask you, rather than the numbers of the Doctors, to tell me which Doctors I'm choosing between.
Okay, so Paul McGann, Christopher Eccleston, or David Tennant?
Okay, I'm going to say David Tennant. I don't think he was involved before then.
It was Paul McGann.
Really?
Yeah, he turned down the opportunity to audition for the Eighth Doctor because he felt like he was only being put up there among a whole load of other British actors. And so he didn't think he was being properly considered for it.
In fairness, which Doctor Who that's been considered, and obviously we don't know this, but hasn't been an English actor?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there have been. Well, Peter Capaldi, I mean, our Scottish listeners would object to
British actor.
I think he just felt at the time that he was being put up, that they were just casting around for a British actor and that he would be part of a whole load of people.
But traditionally, every Doctor Who has been a British actor.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah,
we're not talking James Bond here.
No, I think it would be really interesting. I googled how many Doctor Who's have been Scottish because I was really curious. And I, you know, obviously I knew David Tennant was. I'd forgotten that Sylvester McCoy was also Scottish. But I couldn't find it to download. But there was an essay written basically about Doctor Who and Scottishness within Doctor Who. So it's definitely a thing that has resonated and really interesting. Well done though. It's a good effort on those. Should we talk about the Jodie Whittaker episodes that we're going to watch?
I was really excited about Jodie. I must say, I kind of feel like she didn't get the writing and the support that she deserved because she gave an amazing energy to the Doctor as a character and obviously the first female. I thought she was awesome, but without re-watching episodes, which obviously we're going to do before our next university, I kind of feel that she was let down by the writing and the showrunners.
Yeah, I'm going to come into this, as I have with all of them, with a very much an open mind. I know there was sort of a lot of controversy around Jodie Whittaker becoming the Doctor. But having, you know, again, looked online at which episodes recommended, there was acknowledgement of that and praise of some of these episodes. So there was, like, you know, acknowledgement that actually some of the Jodie Whittaker episodes are really quite good. So I'm still looking forward to watching these ones. But the ones I've got for you are Rosa. This is season 11, episode 3. Montgomery, Alabama, 1955. The Doctor and her friends find themselves in the deep south of America as they encounter a seamstress by the name of Rosa Parks. They begin to wonder whether someone is attempting to change history. And I think this is the third episode that Jodie is in, and obviously the first one where she does a sort of historical encounter. The second one I've got for you is Fugitive of the Jadoon, which is season 12, episode 5. Ho, show, blow! Trigger-happy space police, the Jadoon, are targeting 21st century Gloucester. The Doctor, Yaz, Ryan, and Graham race back to Earth in order to prevent them doing too much damage to the cathedral city. But who are they looking for, and what did they do to incur the wrath of the Jadoon? And the third one I've got for you is Village of the Angels. This is season 13, episode 4. Devon, November 1967. A little girl has gone missing. Professor Eustacius Jericho is conducting psychic experiments, and in the village graveyard, there is one gravestone too many. Why is Mediton known as the Cursed Village, and what do the Weeping Angels want?
Well, what has become recent, what we do, no doubt we'll watch all three. I'm excited about Village of the Angels because as characters, I love the Weepy Angels. I've watched all of Jodie Whittaker's tenure, but I'm really looking forward to re-watching and reminding myself of those episodes.
Yeah, the other thing that I might try and do if I get time is also watch The Power of the Doctor, which is the feature-length special, which was Jodie's last adventure as Doctor Who. I mean, it's got the Daleks, the Cybermen, and the Master in it. So I think it might be a really nice way of kind of wrapping up our Hooniversity Challenge watch by looking at that final one. The other thing that
is
I think
the one that leads into David Tennant's brief reappearance.
Yes. Yeah. At the end of that episode is when David Tennant regenerates, I believe. Well, the other thing I think we ought to do, Neil, perhaps for next time round, is think about our Doctor Who ranking. And I think you can rank it in any way that you like, but some way of ordering the Doctors. It could be your sort of order of your favourite Doctors. For me, I think I'm going to go along the lines of the Doctors I'm most likely to go back and watch more of. So that's kind of what I'm going to do for next week. Is give you
well, you do whatever pleasures you. I mean, I tend to rank every night. Nothing to do with Doctors. I'll have a think.
Okay, great stuff. But some sort of ranking by the end would be, I think, a good university challenge for us both. But yeah, as ever, I really enjoyed watching these, really enjoyed talking about it and diving a little bit deeper into Peter Capaldi. But so next time round, we'll be watching Rosa, Fugitive of the Jadoon, Village of the Angels, and quite possibly The Power of the Doctor as well. If you want to let us know what you thought about Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, you can get in touch via the social media as ever at tvdnapod or by email at tvdnapod@gmail.com. We have a special on Shogun coming out very, very soon, if not out already. We're going to be doing that every 2 weeks. We've also got our Oscar specials coming out, Oscar predictions episode, and there'll be more spoiler-free watch list episodes to come as well. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you, Neil.